Hey, Fresh?
Yes.
Does Mario fart?
Are we starting the show differently now?
No, does Mario fart? I want to, before we
Normally you just say your name and then I say my name and then you welcome everyone. And then you might pose a ridiculous question.
You think I have time for that when we have a question to answer?
Clearly not. We have
Hi, my name is Christopher Thomas Plant. Your name is Russ Frushchick. Welcome to the Resties, where the best of the rest discuss the rest of the best, or the rest of the best discuss the best of the rest. Either works. Today, I'm asking you, my longtime friend, probably the closest I have to a brother, does Mario fart?
Yes.
I don't think he does. I thought about this a lot today.
Well, I've never seen him fart, so that's fair.
You've never seen him fart, and there's no proof that he has a butthole.
But you've never seen his butt.
True.
Like, clean butt.
So, here's why I thought about this a lot.
Okay.
Every Mario toy, there's no evidence to suggest that he has, like, that he has human anatomy.
But, that's every toy. Has a butthole represented.
I think he lives in a toy-like world where they do not poot, they do not fart, none of these.
We know that's false because he has a quasi-brother who farts all the time.
Oh. So I'm sure that there's some people listening, probably Griffin, if Griffin is listening, who think this is puerile. But I'm not doing this for the goose or the laughs. I think these are important questions in terms of, like, really getting to know characters. You know, we've known this guy. I've known Mario my whole life. He was born basically the exact same time I was, October 1985. And I would think that he could be comfortable around me.
Wait, he was born earlier than that. When did Donkey Kong come out?
Well, you know, the real one. Not like the test one.
Super Mario.
Yes, thank you. And his brothers.
And his various brothers. Look, I agree with you that there's no canonical evidence of him farting, although we could probably tap into the Super Mario Super Show and get numerous examples. But in the case of the video games, there's not really a specific moment where we see or watch him fart. But given the fact that Wario farts a good deal, and you've had a revelation.
That's it. Wario has been, it's like Liquid Snake and Solid Snake. Right? They had to make one Mario that doesn't fart at all. The perfect Mario. But in return, they were left with Wario, who was left with all of the farts.
So is Luigi like Solidus?
I don't...
I know
a lot more about Kojima mythology than I do.
I don't even want to bring up Waluigi in this scenario. Who fucking knows at that point?
Hey, I feel good about this. I feel good enough that we can move on knowing that Mario does in fact not
fart. He's Revolver Ocelot. Like, there's no question. He's definitely Revolver Ocelot.
You keep saying things like I'm going to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, don't worry. The people know. The people know.
Sure. Mario does not fart. Wario farts on behalf of Mario, kind of like a picture of Dorian Gray style.
Sure.
Oh, and that's why Wario gets more and more grotesque, because every time Mario needs to fart, it, like, builds up inside of... that makes a lot of sense. Anyway, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Resties. Today, we're talking about two things. Well, kind of three things. First, we're going to talk about, should you finish a video game? It's a question that kind of got raised on the most recent episode of the Besties in regards to Elden Ring, a game that goes on forever. And I'm the only one on the Besties who has not finished it, though. Update, I have beaten Radahn.
Yay!
Yeah, we can talk about that later. And then after that, after the break, we're going to talk about a new version of, get this, Doom. They did it again. Doom is back. This time they added ray tracing, or a very clever modder added ray tracing to the original Doom. What does that mean? Well, I will save that for the back half, because explaining ray tracing, we can't do that in the intro. We've already gone long enough.
That all sounds great.
Great. Then I will see you right after this break. Fresh, do I have to finish Elden Ring to be a real gamer?
No, of course not. I was thinking of being facetious and saying, yeah, because otherwise you won't be late, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But no, you realistically, I mean, A, there's no such thing as a real gamer. And B, you know, I've known you a long time and I know how you just don't finish games, like maybe one or two a year. Is that fair to say? Like bigger games.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I finish indie games that are like
The shorter 3 to 4 hour, 5 hour games.
Yeah,
I do finish.
I think if it's like five hours and I start it, I'm almost certainly going to finish it. 8 hours is kind of where it gets into like the we'll see. And then once you get past that, it's like, who knows?
I mean, I know, probably not is the answer.
Well, the weird thing is it gets kind of illogical because it could be like a game is 12 hours and I won't, but then a game could be like 110 hours like Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And sure, why not?
And did you finish that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you actually finished it?
Not only did I finish Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I beat all of the DLC.
Wow.
Yeah, and I do not like the DLC. It doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned this to Plant as a possible topic because, as he mentioned, it came up in the most recent Besties. And it's interesting, certainly as like, you know, I think we need to divide this into two conversations. There's the like, just a gamer playing games, having fun, enjoying it, digesting the media part of it. And then there's the like reviewer part of it. Because if you're reviewing a game, unless you're reviewing like fucking Fortnite, and there's no way to like, quote, beat it. You really have to beat it. I don't think so. Narrative games, 100%.
For a narrative game, yes.
So like 13 Sentinels, you couldn't review that game without beating it. Or right. Nier Automata or, you know, anything that has like a strong narrative bent to it.
Right.
If it's Crackdown 3, yeah, you could probably get away with not beating the whole thing.
Yeah, or like Forza Horizon.
Yes,
right.
Precisely.
Like I feel like there's a lot of games in that category where it's like, eh. But yes, I agree. It would be strange to review Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah.
Without having stayed to the very last nasty bit.
But we're not talking about reviewers in this case. We're talking about just like you and me and
normal
folks, normal people playing video games, and whether there's this feeling of whether guilt or you feel like you missed out or missing something by not having beaten the game. I will speak for myself because I have pretty strong feelings about this. I personally feel especially if it's a game that I like, I feel an obligation to finish it because I feel like in the back of my head, and I know myself, in the back of my head, I will remember, oh, I still haven't beaten that yet. I really should. If it's a game I don't like, forget about it. For example, I just recently booted up Cyberpunk 2077, a game that I didn't particularly care for, but it recently got patched and added a bunch of next-gen features. So like, oh, I'm going to try this, and it's still not fun to me. I mean, I'm sure there are other people that like it, but for me, it's still not fun, and I had no compunction about being like, nope, goodbye forever.
Yeah.
But for a game that I really enjoy, I really do want to beat it, and that can be really hard if things are really busy and there's a lot of stuff coming out where I have to keep a mental log of games that I want to beat. So Kirby, for example, is on my list right now. I don't have any work reason to beat it. Besties, we talked about it already on Besties. I'm sure it'll come up in Game of the Year Besties at the end of the year, but that's a game that like I'm still picking away at and will remember if I don't finish it because I've been enjoying myself so much. Games are always coming up.
I think, well, you also were a completionist.
I was. I was much more driven by trophies and stuff like that in years hence. I would say like that has mostly left me.
Yeah.
There are some examples where if I get like 90% of the trophies in some game that I enjoyed and the last few are just like fun things to chase down, I will do it. But I do not like play shitty games to like get a platinum trophy or anything like that. I wouldn't say it's necessarily me unless it's a game like I really enjoy. You know, Elden Ring is an example of a game that like even if I'm not paying attention to trophies or Steam achievements or whatever it is, I'm going to try to be really thorough because I love exploring the world and finding everything I can find and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think I think I'm weirdly similar to you. I think I have two ways I finish a game or feel the need to finish it. One is it's a great exercise bike game.
Sure.
And that's the Assassin's Creed Odyssey thing. That is Rage 2, a game I didn't like that much. But
did you beat Rage 2?
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, just because it's not that long, and it was an easy, easy exercise bike game. Like,
sure.
I beat it in, like, a week or something. Death Stranding is another one of those games.
Yeah.
But Death Stranding is kind of the perfect example in that it was a great exercise bike game. And here's the other one. I loved it. And if I like deeply connect with the game, and these are the Nier Automata's, the Death Strandings, the 13 Sentinels, I will beat that game. There's like no way once I've started, I'm going to see the end of it. The issue for me is I don't love mini games. I like mini games. I think mini games are great, but that kind of, oh, I am in love with this. I need to know where it's going. That I only feel like happens a couple times a year. And those probably are the games that I finish. I'm trying to think if there's anything recently that I felt that strongly about and then didn't finish. And then there are, yeah.
I mean, I can give you two examples.
Yes.
Example A, Breath of the Wild. And example B, Elden Ring.
Well, so neither of those are good examples, though. Because Breath of the Wild, we've talked about this. I was the biggest holdout on Besties. In terms of
sure, I remember. And then you turn around on it.
And then I turned around on it, but I still, now it's like other stuff is happening, you know. I but you're right. That's close.
I mean, it was a year. You turned around on it a year ago. It's been a year.
Was it a year?
I think it was the first Resties episode was you, okay. Us, like, going back and forth about it.
So, yeah, like half a year. The other one, Elden Ring. I know that you don't believe it. I do think I will beat Elden Ring. I think I'm just going to have to really take my time with it. And
I mean, you should. That's the way to play the game,
and,
honestly.
And the thing that's turned that around for me is, one, the Steam Deck makes it just easy.
Yeah.
It, like, you know, I can play it wherever I want, and I can play it before bed. It's very chill. I don't have all the pressure of sitting in front of, you know, the computer that I sit in front of all day. But the other thing, and this was the big surprise, because I stepped away from it for probably 2 weeks, it's actually pretty easy to go back to. I was really worried that, oh, once I step away from this game, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to know where I was. I'm not going to know how to play it, any of that stuff. And that is false. And maybe that's just because I'm super overpowered with my character, but it doesn't really matter. The fact is, I was able to hop back in, and it was like no time had passed at all, and I feel like I'm right back to being addicted to it.
Yeah, it's funny. I took a break because I was playing Tunic, and I wanted to finish Tunic. And I went back to it, and because there are, I'm not saying they're identical games, but, you know, you roll in Tunic, there's bonfires, like, it's similar enough.
They're twins.
That I definitely kept using the Tunic inputs in Elden Ring, and it took me, like, a good half hour to, like, remap my brain for that. But otherwise, yes, I completely agree. Jumping back into it was not hard. It's also, like, I don't want you to do this, but if you wanted to, where you're at right now, I mean, it's funny. It's funny. I was going to say, like, you could probably sprint to the end. You're probably, in sprinting to the end, 20 hours away from the ending.
You think?
Which is, extremely funny to me.
That's
amazing. And that's like a dead sprint right towards the finish.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, that's
it's
great.
It's just an enormous fucking game.
I want more of this game. So I'm chill with it. I'm glad that I kind of made it to this point, because I did feel a lot of pressure between Besties and work to, like, get caught up. And now, you know, I've watched lore videos. I've had everything spoiled for me. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm on the other end, and I can just enjoy it for what it is. That said, I think Elden Ring's unique in that it's maybe the best game ever made.
Yeah.
So, the pressure to finish that is very different than other games. I have a few other, you know, bits and bobs down here. We talked about endless games, so like Fortnite. I think that's just changed the perspective for most folks of, like, do I need to beat games? Because, you know, in our day, beating a game was like the point, right? You put in quarters into an arcade machine, or you, I mean, you did.
How fucking old are you?
You didn't come, the game.
Yeah, sure, I played
on
an arcade, but it was not the,
yeah,
it was not the heyday of arcade. Like,
no, well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is games designed for the Sega Genesis were built off the arcade aesthetic.
Yeah, sure.
So it was levels, it was getting to the end, seeing the credits, right?
Yeah.
And like, that was the whole point. And that we've gradually moved further and further away from that, to the point now where I don't think people who are just starting getting into gaming in the last 5 years necessarily even associate seeing the end of a game or beating a game with being the point of playing a game.
Yeah, I think it depends on the game. Like, I think, you know, you mentioned Last of Us 2, again, strong narrative game. It's hard to feel like you had that experience without kind of knowing that full story, because so much of it is dedicated to the narrative. But a game like Animal Crossing, or even a game like Kirby, realistically speaking, you could play a lot of Kirby, not beat it, and still, I think, get precisely what they wanted you to get out of that. Because, you know, it has like amazing levels and it's fun. It's like a romp. There's not like a riveting story bringing you through it. Yeah, I think it just depends on the game.
Did you see the bonkers rumor that Michael Pachter, who's like a very well-known video game analyst, put out there about Grand Theft Auto 6?
I did not.
So the rumor that I guess he put onto a podcast was that Grand Theft Auto 6 has been in development since, like, I don't know, 2014 or 2015.
Sure.
That it's multiple cities, and that it is going to be like 500 hours long.
I mean, the fact that it's multiple cities is not crazy, because San Andreas had multiple cities.
Right. Well,
so they've done it.
The question is it multiple cities and like it's very large different neighborhoods? Because you could also say that with Grand Theft Auto 5, right? That like Los Angeles and the northern tip of the island are different cities entirely.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like there's a lot of ways that you could bend this.
I mean, and the 500 hour thing is like something we would get if we went into a demo. It's like there's 500 hours of gameplay, but only if you collect every seashell on every beach.
Yes.
Like, yes. Poor shit.
Or, it's some like weird estimate because you include GTA Online and yada, 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 yada.
Yeah.
But I see why an analyst would be pushing something like that, because it does seem like the natural progression of things, right? Because if Elden Ring is this big and Grand Theft Auto has to always be the biggest open world game, then like what does Grand Theft Auto become? If Elden Ring is this big and if Fortnite is this popular and other, you know, always like online games are this popular, what does the biggest single player experience become? And I think like that's a natural place for your head to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had to guess on GTA 6, it's probably, you know, we've seen Rockstar in two games now, Red Dead 2 and GTA 5, kind of shoehorn and back their way into an online system, which felt like kind of playing second banana to the main single player. And granted, over time, that has paid off huge because they made a ton of money on GTA Online. But I think GTA 6 will just like be fully integrated such that you can be doing the single player thing and there's multiplayer elements still happening around you while you're playing the single player campaign, so that they're not cloistered. And if you keep that in mind, sure, easily you can get to the 500 hour mark, because they don't have to program every cutscene with voiceover and all sorts of stuff. It's just like, oh, here's a generated mission of stealing a car, and that's 2 hours or whatever. So, yeah, that would be my guess. I agree that I think you will be able to beat GTA 6 from a campaign standpoint, but I think it will be a lot more multiplayer.
Yeah. One more thing before we kind of wrap this section. And this is, do you prefer short games at this point? Or is
150%, yes.
Yeah. So if somebody came to you and they're like, hey, I'm going to give you Horizon Zero Dawn, Forbidden West 3.
Sure.
And it can be just the 10 best hours of this game.
Yes.
You much prefer
that. In a minute. I do that. I make that decision all the time, because I frequently am, you know, approached by members of the Polygon team. Mike Mahardy, our reviews editor, very kind and talented gentleman, will frequently come to me and be like, hey, are you interested in reviewing this game? And my immediate calculation is, how long do I think this game is? Because I need to know what sort of thing I'm doing. Now, there have been times when I have fallen on the grenade of what I know is a long game. Examples that spring to mind. Fire Emblem Three Houses, and also Death Stranding, which is a game I reviewed and knew it was going to be long, and it was long, and it was a total sprint to get that done. In those scenarios, yeah, I almost always strive to only review games that are short, just shorter, I should say, like 8 hours in that realm, because I won't hate myself by the end of it, and it doesn't like spoil the game for me, whereas for a 40-hour game that you have to jam into a week, that can frequently make the game feel like work. No, I love short games. I recently tweeted, people were tweeting like reasons to get canceled for your video game opinions. I recently tweeted that I thought that Nier Automata should have been 5 hours long, and people were not super happy about that. But what I would say is, I don't mean like the first 5 hours and then the game should have ended. I mean like there's a version of Nier Automata that is like pretty heavily edited with only the best chunks in it that is 5 hours long, and it leaves a way more of an impact on me than the, I don't know how long that game was, 30-hour game?
I mean, I'm the world's biggest fan.
I know you are. Biggest. I know.
And I would say, I think you can cut probably like 5 hours.
Yeah.
If you're including like side quest, everything from the first playthrough, you can cut almost all of the second playthrough and then just keep everything else as is.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's that second playthrough that's just...
Yeah, not good. That guy's really bad. Who is that? 2B? 2B? The boy?
Yeah, you switch sides.
Yeah, he sucks.
It's mostly the same game.
He's not fun.
Yeah, I like it. I like the hacking. It's great, but it's a lot. I'm the same way. I much prefer short games. I kind of like I would like it if I could have really great AAA short games with the very occasional Elden Ring or ongoing games like Fortnite.
Sure.
What I find frustrating is when games by publishers aren't willing to invest the amount of creativity and time and money into a game. And then we get the Ubisoft dilemma where it's, hey, we want this game to be as big as Elden Ring or GTA, but that's really all we care about is just the scope. Nothing else is really justifying the scope other than we've decided in a room somewhere that makes good business.
Yeah.
And that I don't like. And I know that's coming from a huge place of privilege that, you know, a lot of people, you know, getting a game is tough. You know, it's expensive and you want to make it go as far as possible. And that I think was especially true 10 years ago when I would like, early in my career in the games press. I don't think that holds as much weight these days with things like Game Pass and now PlayStation Plus, where you actually have a ton of options for games.
I would also add that like I think people, even people that are only buying one game a year, let's say if their favorite game franchise is Far Cry, for example, even those people will sense that Ubisoft is pulling a little bit of chicanery insofar as like, here's the template, we know the template, we're going to build on the template and add a little bit here and there and there, but broadly speaking, like, this is the same core experience and like it has a lot of padding to it. Whereas I mean Elden Ring from a the fact that that game was made and is as big and as good as it is, like right out of the gate, is a fucking miracle. Like, I am on a daily basis totally stunned that happened.
I've seen a few people mention that Elden Ring probably was a little more busted than any of us noticed, and that we're like seeing it get fixed in real time, but the game is just so overall good.
I don't think that's true. There were bugs.
Well,
there were bugs.
No, the point's not the bugs. It's that, like, they're adding story stuff for you to be able to complete quest. Or there are like entire cutscenes that are in cinematic trailers that just aren't in the game yet.
Yeah, well, not forget about yet. Like that's stuff that From Software does. Like they frequently release trailers that just don't get used in the game. It's bizarre. I'm just compare this release, Elden Ring's release, to Cyberpunk, and you can see the night and day difference that we're talking about. Cyberpunk was supposed to be the biggest thing in the world, launched, total disaster, and so when I said, granted, it was not, Elden Ring was not perfect at launch, there were PC, like, little hiccups here and there, and you're right, like, some of the quests weren't 100% done, but from a just general feat perspective, it is awe-inspiring what they pulled off.
Yeah. When I say that it launched like busted or missing things, it's not even close to the same thing as even a Bethesda game in this case.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there is so much in this game that they can leave out large chunks of the story. They can leave out cutscenes that maybe will get added at a later date. They could leave out quests that get added at a later date. And most people would never know.
Right.
You know,
even if you're doing that quest, you don't know that there's no last step because you have no idea where anyone fucking is.
Yeah. And like the barring the most hardcore people, you're not reading up on like sites like ours, or not even sites like ours, YouTube channels that are trying to break down the minutiae of what changes in each patch update. Right.
Yeah.
Like there's an audience for that, but it is a fraction of a percent of the people who are playing this game.
Yeah.
Anyway, the answer is you don't need to finish games because they might not even be finished themselves. So you're never going to see everything. And that's that. We're going to take a break. I'm going to drink some water. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Doom and ray tracing, your Rust Rustic's favorite feature in video games at this very moment. See you soon.
Okay, so Chris Plant reached out to me and mentioned the fact that there was a ray-traced mod for the original Doom, which came out in the 90s. And so you can play the original Doom with ray tracing. And all that did was my brain was flooded with the many, many emotions that I have regarding ray tracing. Predominantly, the like biggest thought that I have when I think about ray tracing is that it's fucking bullshit and it's not worth all this fucking hullabaloo. It is the equivalent of the 3D glasses that everyone was like, this is going to change the world. Every TV needs 3D glasses. No, I'm sorry. Now, ray tracing does some cool things. We'll talk about that in a second. But is it worth the 30 frames per second hit that you frequently get when you turn ray tracing on? No, it is not. And we'll just jump right in.
Yes. First, should I explain what ray tracing is?
You can try. Let me try first, and then you can correct me, because you definitely know more than me, and I'm going to try to do it.
Okay.
My understanding of ray tracing is the traditional way for games to be made, let's say in the last 10 years, was that there would be a lighting artist that would go and place lights in a world, like a light bulb in a game level, for example, and certain aspects of the game engine would allow that light to naturally flood through the environment. But what it wouldn't do is the light would not bounce off surfaces and then light up other areas within that same environment. So the end result was you'd have this light that had like a very stark contrast between light and dark. And everything outside of the light space would just be like effectively very dark, and it made it feel not as realistic. What ray tracing does is allows light to realistically bounce off surfaces such that if a light bulb was bouncing off the floor, it would light up a corner of the room that ordinarily wouldn't get lit, but because there's that reflective light, it is getting lit. How was that?
I think that's close.
Okay.
Here's the thing, and this goes to why ray tracing is a mess, is I read about this a fair amount, and I still am not sure that I'm saying it right. So both of us could be wrong here. And dear listener, if you want, either go to our Twitter feed, because I'm sure somebody's letting us know we're wrong there, or the subreddit. I'm sure somewhere somebody is like giving us hyper detailed explanation of it. But I'll take a shot at it. In the past, it was rasterization, which would be like a fixed point of lighting. right?
Yes.
So it's what light looked like hitting, imagine a person, and then imagine light hitting that person. And imagine that that is just the, that no matter where everything moves around, that is the fixed way that light is going to hit that object once you enter that room, right?
Okay. Like a light bulb hitting a person.
Like a light bulb, but that it's like permanent. So ray tracing, right?
Yeah.
Is that there are many different points of light, many points of light hitting that.
Would you say 1,000 points of light?
I think it could be like billion. Okay. Like, I think it could be like a lot more than that.
It's fine.
So it would be that when you see the like ray traced light hitting it, you would see reflections from all over the environment. It could be light that, yes, is bouncing off a wall. It could be from like multiple light points, and that lighting could evolve with the world, right? That is not effectively cooked into the world.
So if a tire rolls through the room, it's going to change the lighting scenario.
Right, right. And then path tracing, which is I believe a form of ray tracing, which I think is the thing that you're getting at. And again, I could be wrong here, but I believe that is when you take ray tracing, multiple forms of light, and then you factor in all of the way that light engages within the environment. So that could be the scattering of light. It could be the reflection of light. It could be how light passes through and refracts on surfaces. So think about like your human body, right? If you're in like a dark room and you put a flashlight behind your finger, you know how you can actually see light come through the skin and to a little bit less the muscle, and then you just can't see it come through the bone at all, right?
Well, my bones, it does.
But sure, yeah, sure. Very bird-like. but like that would be an example of like how light is engaging with those materials of your body. So path tracing is like the top end. I believe the Doom thing that we're talking about is path tracing. It is the most realistic form of it. And that's why we are seeing path tracing being done with things like Quake right now in Doom, because doing that, I mean, years ago, people would just say that like that's straight up impossible. You could not render that in real time. Now you can do it with a very, 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 very old rudimentary game. And you need quite literally the best GPU on the market today.
Yeah, Quake 2, which has ray tracing, there's a free version of Quake 2 on Steam that has ray tracing, came out in 1997. If you play it now, I have a pretty decent gaming laptop. I have no problem running Elden Ring or whatever recent releases. It gives me 45 frames a second for a game that came out in 1997.
Which is wild, because you can run Elden Ring at, I'm sure,
yeah, 60 screaming, like Forza Horizon, you name it, like every other Halo, not a problem. But because this ray tracing is such a taxing thing, I can only run it at 45. Now, it's worth noting that like both with Doom ray traced and with Quake 2 ray traced, it is very obvious. I can see it immediately, the difference between ray tracing being on and ray tracing being off. And I think a lot of that has to do with just like the simplicity of the games. The lighting, or the original lighting, was like the most basic lighting imaginable. It was like you walk into a square, and if it's a light square, everything would be just like lit from everywhere. Like it would not be very realistic, because that's the technology they had back then. You throw in realistic lighting into that, and it's like pretty game changing and remarkable. But that, as we've said, that only works for really old looking games, because A, you can't run a newer looking game with like all those bells and whistles going, because it'll melt your computer through the floor. And B, honestly, newer looking games, and this is like the other point I want to make, newer looking games already had pretty damn good lighting representation that I can really, gun to my head, cannot tell the difference in a lot of cases between ray traced and not.
So I think that's all correct. I think you're right on all that. There, especially modern games, there are just tons of tricks that designers have learned to fake realistic lighting. Right.
Yes.
And now those tricks cost way less on your processing to actually perform. So when you play something like Metro, the most recent Metro game, which has a number of ray tracing options on it, not like everything in the world, but you can do a lot of ray tracing light in this game. The difference is not immediately obvious in every part of the game. It just isn't. Like, there will be parts of the game where it looks nearly identical. I do think it's much more noticeable in very dark areas, or areas with like puddles, or dark areas with puddles, where you're going to see the way that light bounces and reflects, and it'll affect the environment in a more noticeable way versus just a very bright area. So there's
What's funny though is, so I was watching, I didn't play Metro, but I did watch I think it was a Digital Foundry video like talking about the ray tracing features. And it's interesting because there are scenes in the original Metro that were extremely dark and creepy, or like dramatic. So there's a scene, I think, on a train where, you know, someone's hugging their family, whatever it is. And in the original version, it's lit in such a way that, you know, almost has a noir style to it because it's so contrasty. But because of ray tracing, which allows light to bounce off surfaces, the entire train car is suddenly like very lit, to the point where there's really no dark shadows. And that like kind of changes the composition entirely.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is you're losing control of the lighting, right? And like
the developer is losing control,
like,
to some extent.
That's very cool to have very natural lighting, but then it's natural lighting. You know, it's the difference between like being outside and having a film set where you just are creating a frame with very specific lights. All this is imprecise. When we're talking about this, I understand that there are going to be exceptions to practically everything we're saying, but I think people generally get it.
But the film example you make is very good, because I think obviously, like, especially with cutscenes, I think there's an easy analog to make between film, like movies, and like video game cutscenes. And in movies, they have lights, like literal lights. They are not, I mean, granted, light is also realistically bouncing off surfaces, so maybe maybe that's a fair point in contrast, but it is a very controlled environment where they're using lights in a movie set. I don't know. If there wasn't as big of a processor hit as there is with ray tracing, I would be like, hey, this is cool, like, bring it on. But because it is so expensive to run these games well, it would need to be way more stark of a difference than it is, and it's just not there.
Yeah, I think all that's fair. I think, going back to the movies, I think that the comparison would be the early period of CGI, computer animation backgrounds, versus matte painting, where at the time, CG looked way worse.
Yeah.
Than matte painting. And matte painting looked incredible. And then eventually you got to a point where it's like, well, I guess they kind of look the same, but like CG cost a fortune, so why would you do it? And eventually we've gotten to the point now where it's the exact opposite, right? Where you would look at a matte painting and immediately it would look wrong to you, because so much time and effort and expertise has gone into CG, and the ceiling is just that much higher. And I think that is the future of ray tracing, that the ceiling on it is way, 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 way higher. But it's going to be, I don't know, a decade before we have enough experience with designing with it in mind, taking advantage of it. And I think the other thing that we will probably see is like a mix of both, right? Like, you are not confined to one type of lighting.
Sure.
And that's honestly how games are made right now, since you again quite literally can't use all path tracing to light your entire game world right now without, you know, reaching the core of the earth with your scalding hot gaming PC. The reason I brought Doom, because we didn't talk about that, is I think these old games are good examples of what's cool about the potential of ray tracing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So Doom has a number of rooms where there are no windows, right? There's no doors, there's no lights. So you have to use a flashlight to just be able to see in this
Which was not in the original Doom. Did not have a flashlight.
Or you could actually just fire off your gun, and that would light the path. And as you fire off a missile or rocket, you see, you know, the room light up wherever the rocket goes and then go into darkness behind it and in front of it. That is cool. I think the best AAA application of this is Control, where that, you know, that design, that brutalism design is full of, you know, glass. And there's tons of reflection where you can see yourself and other characters reflect on that glass.
Yeah, and I've seen Control with ray tracing on, and I can't tell. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I can amateur. If you like freeze frame it and zoom in on a fucking like the iris of someone. Great, like yeah, my reflection in that iris. But in any like normal gameplay scenario, give me basic reflections and the frame rate and I'm much happier.
I was watching a Digital Foundry who, after this, if you've listened to this whole thing and you have questions, Digital Foundry on YouTube, they will be your guide through ray tracing. They have a great video up on Doom that went up just in this past week. But they did a video on Biomutant or something else on April Fools.
Yeah.
I believe it was that game. And they zoomed in on the eye of the character to find that, like, what was the pre-baked reflection. And I believe it was the, like, demo level of the Unreal Engine. So it was always reflecting the, like, that the first demo level that you would see when working with that tool.
That's great. That's great.
I love it. And like, why not? Like, no one is going to zoom in on that eye. That is a perfectly reasonable shortcut.
I do want to say one thing just to close this out. If you do want to like experience ray tracing for yourself and you don't want to like have a totally insanely beefy machine, Doom is extremely cool. I'd highly recommend it. You do need the original Doom, which I believe is on sale on Steam.
Yeah,
is
you can correct? Get it for like, I think, $5.
Yeah, very cheap. You just need the like WAD file for Doom. So you need that. But very easy to run. It takes 2 seconds to install. Just search Doom Ray Tracing Mod. The other game that I think is an extremely cool representation of ray tracing, but is definitely kind of a hog in terms of your processing power, Minecraft looks incredible.
Oh, yeah. It looks wild.
Looks incredible in ray tracing, like night and day different from the original Minecraft. And again, I think it is simple games, very blocky games that actually benefit most because... Yeah. I don't know. There's not as much.
Well, you can also like, just see about. That right now. Like if you go on YouTube, you don't even need to play.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Because Minecraft is so recognizable and iconic that if you look at the ray tracing version, that'll give you a really clear idea. And I think Minecraft is kind of a perfect test for all of this because it's about how light engages with materials.
Yes.
So you have shiny surfaces, you have dull surfaces, you have gloss, you have glass. All of these different surfaces next to each other and radiating different colors of light. It looks really cool. It can also look totally hideous because again, none of the light is controlled. So if you put red and blue and green and yellow and orange lights all around each other in a big reflective area, it just looks like kind of garbage. It is not a pretty look. And that's because if you did that in your house, it would also look like garbage.
That's true.
That's the last bit of home decoration advice from us at the Resties.
Love it.
Do you have anything else before we wrap this section?
I don't think so.
Cool. Then we should probably talk about our recommendations of the week.
I have one.
Tell me.
Okay, so... I was poking around Game Pass, and I noticed that there was a sequel to a game I kept meaning to play but never got around to playing called, man, the original game was called Far Lone Sails.
Oh, yeah.
And I never played it, but it always seemed really cool to me. And the sequel just came out. I want to get the name right. So the sequel, which is on Game Pass, if you are subscribed to Game Pass, is called Far Changing Tides. But the original was called Lone Sails. I haven't played the sequel yet, but I did start just playing Lone Sails. It is basically Limbo, the side-scrolling puzzle platformer, very good, very well known, meets Master Blaster because you're a tiny little person and you've got this enormous, I guess it's like a, it kind of looks like what the Jawas ride around in, those sand crawler things. And you're bringing it from left to right across this like enormous landscape, and you constantly have to find fuel to get it to move. And so the finding the fuel and like getting it back to your ship is part of the puzzle platforming. But there's also like, oh, my engine started going on fire and I need to like grab the hose to like put the fire out and stuff like that. It's really cool. It does amazing things with scale where the camera will pull like way back to the point where you are just like a tiny dot in comparison to like the enormous world around you, which I love. I love games that do that. I've been really digging it. The original is not on Game Pass, unfortunately, but you can buy it on Steam and various other platforms. I think it's $15. But the sequel is on Game Pass. Again, I have not played the sequel, but based on my initial experience, which I'm planning on playing more, I'm loving Lone Sails. Far Lone Sails is the original name. So yeah, check that out.
That sounds great.
It's really good.
That's one of those games that I just feel like I've wanted to play forever and just never did.
Maybe. Yeah, that's how I felt too. And I was like, I just played Cyberpunk. I just booted up Cyberpunk to try that next gen patch. I was like, man, this made me a little bit sad. And I just needed something. And my understanding is it's like a pretty short game and I needed something as a palate cleanser. And yeah, worked out.
I love it. My recommendation, I know I often just recommend things that I am watching at the Art House Theater near my house, but I'm doing it again. I'm recommending Only Yesterday, which is a Studio Ghibli film. Have you seen this one?
I don't think so. When did it come out?
So it's not Miyazaki. It is directed by Asao Takahata.
Okay.
And it came out in 1991.
Hmm.
And it is unbelievably good. It's unbelievable. I want you to watch, just like give 10 minutes to it.
I mean, it's very easy to convince me to watch a Studio Ghibli thing. So.
Yeah, and they're all on HBO Max. So oh, easy for you.
Terrific.
But the art direction of this film is unreal. And I would say it's hard to imagine something like this getting made today, but that's actually not true because Ghibli would go on to make another film that was kind of like this. It's very, very incomplete, almost, is the phrase for it, where there will be backgrounds that just fade out into white, so almost like the canvas isn't fully finished.
Yeah.
And that's kind of whenever we're looking to the characters' memories. So it's beautiful. It is set in the early 80s. And it's about a young, I guess, she's not supposed to be young at this point in her life, but like she's in her late 20s. She's living in, I think, Tokyo. She's not married. She hates her job. And she decides to go back to the country. And in doing that, we also just learn a lot about her childhood and through these flashbacks. And it's about how hard it is growing up, both when you're a teenager and also when you're an adult. And it is beautiful. It is not full of magical realism. It is not, you know, Spirited Away. It's nothing like that. It is just a very human personal story. And it's tied with The Wind Rises for my favorite movie from the studio. But they're very different.
Yeah.
The Wind Rises is, I mean, just epic. It's
very good. Wind Rises is also a tough hang.
It's a yes. Yeah. Wind Rises, I feel like I can watch every few years. Only Yesterday, I feel like I can watch pretty regularly. It's just like a good have it on in the background movie.
Yeah.
It's also very sad because of course it is because it was made by the studio.
And you're recommending it.
And I'm recommending it. So then you also, yes, you know it's sad. Also, there's a new-ish English dub and because I totally get when people prefer that. And Daisy Ridley is the main character and Dev Patel is one of the other main characters. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a great cast. So you really can't go wrong. And I think that's it. Oh, one other thing. We don't have questions today. We didn't do reader mail because earlier this week I reached out on the Besties subreddit asking for, you know, what do people want to hear this upcoming month or 2 months or 3 months? Because it will be slower than the past, you know, rush of games for the past, quarter. We got a ton of excellent replies and a lot of great feedback. And we're just kind of working our way through that. So I wanted to let everybody know that we saw it. a bunch of good stuff there. One question, I wish I had it in front of me, was could we make an episode listing our favorite short games, like games that you could complete?
I think that's a great recommendation.
Which is a great idea, and hopefully we'll get to do that in, you know, the next few weeks or months.
Elden Ring, for one.
Oh my gosh.
Easy, we could start right there.
We could just play the beginning, just the tutorial.
Yes.
But that's it. Thank you all for listening. Anything left that you want to say to the world, Fresh?
Fuck ray tracing.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, this has been another episode of The Resties, because shouldn't the best...
Why didn't you write it down? You got the order right.
I was scrolling. It's always up at the top of our thing.
Oh, yeah. You should put it at the bottom.
Okay. And that's it for The Resties, where the rest of the best discuss the best of the rest.
Resties.
Wow, we did it on same.
Yay, on same.
On same.